Dee McKinley, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, with all eyes and ears and emotions still very much focused on the George Floyd incident and trial, where were you when you found out the verdict?
Well, once we heard that the jury had made their decision, I rushed home so that I could be a place where I can yell and scream because I was praying that the verdict was what it was. So I was at home when I heard the verdict read.
And commenced the yelling and screaming?
I screamed the first time when it said guilty. Then I listened for the second one and it said guilty. I had thought that surely it would not be all three. But when it was all three, I hit that holy dance like we do at church. I mean, all around that room saying, yes, yes, yes. Now we can move forward.
So while you were hoping and praying and giving your all for that verdict, it was a great surprise.
It was a blessing because we live in the United States, and after all of the acquittals and all of the not guilties, when Mr. Gardner in New York was killed, when Breonna Taylor and all of those disappointing verdicts, whatever the decision was that was not in favor of the victim, we were praying that we would not have a repeat of that as we were awaiting the verdict.
So then, what does this ruling mean to you? Do you think justice has been served for George Floyd and his family?
Accountability has been served. We're just now getting started when we start talking about justice. Then you start asking, what is justice? And I know a lot of people say justice has been served, but justice has just begun because this is a process. So many things can happen. Surely, in my gut, he's going to appeal. So that's going to take some time. Then we may have to live through that again, and we don't know what the situation is. But for right now, I said, justice is not just us. It's justice, and it's justice for a whole lot of people. I mean, the world was pleased with that verdict, not just here in the United States, not just in the Black community, not just in Africa or African-American communities. It was worldwide. And the situation is that those who marched represented nationwide and worldwide because the death of George Floyd definitely sparked a movement that has been none like it at all.
Now, to many sympathizers, this is a cause for jubilant celebration, period. Others take a more somber stand because Floyd's life can't be given back. What do you say to both sides of that reaction?
For those who are jubilant, I say to them, we can party right now, but the real party comes after we get through the whole situation where he is in prison. And for those who say, well, we can't get him back. No, we can't get him back. But it's like Christ. It's a sacrifice. He made that sacrifice. And just as Christ did for we who are Christians and who believe, then we believe that George Floyd's death was a symbol of America because he died and what we did after the death, the marching and the rules changing and some of those things, we can think about a better life for our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren.
A legacy, yes. And in your mind, Dee, does this verdict feel like a turning point for the Black community?
I would say that it's a turning point. I definitely can't speak for the community. I wish I could just stand over the community and say, this is what we've hoped for. So now where do we go from here? When you look at it worldwide and nationwide and statewide and citywide or blockwide, I would say, yeah, this is a turning point that it gives you hope for America. It gives you hope that where I live, that maybe, just maybe, if something happens to me or someone else in the community at the hands of a police officer, that it will be a situation where I can depend and expect a fair trial, or that they will come to trial and that they will have a fair trial.
And how might it directly combat systemic racism in policing and other institutions where it really needs change?
This is a beginning. It's like walking in the door, but you can't just stand at the door. You got to walk through the door and therefore make some changes. So it's definitely a turning point. that might help combat systemic racism? Because, you know, we spent 4 years basically with racism being embedded. It's not the whole country, but definitely a majority who felt that there is no systemic racism. And that comes from the mouths of those who have to prosecute the law, those who have to make sure that the law is upheld and all of that. Well, you have people who are feeling that systemic racism is not a problem or that it doesn't exist. This is a turning point that we can say that maybe it is, and now we can get busy at doing what we're supposed to do.
You have to admit it before you can work on it.
Definitely, definitely. If you don't believe it, you won't do anything. But if you believe it, then you'll move on it.
Now, Dee, you're well-spoken and you're usually not at a loss for words. So what kind of conversations would you like to see happen between the Black community, starting with ours, and law enforcement?
I like the idea that we have a commission that was commissioned by the mayor to deal with policing. That's a start. But sadly to say, I don't believe that committee represents any family members or any people who have been stopped by the law or been arrested, didn't get a fair hearing, didn't get a fair trial. That representation is kind of missing from there. But that's a start. We can talk to people who have had an encounter with the police and see what in the world can we do to make sure that fairness is in every situation, regardless of race, color, creed, nationality, or religion. The Black community and law enforcement must talk in order to hear why I think that when I see a police officer, that means that they are not coming to my rescue. They are coming to arrest me or they're coming to harass me, whatever the negative is. But now, hopefully, this will start a conversation where we can talk about how we feel when we see each other. Does the policeman tense up because they see a group of Black young men? Do I tense up or do our young men tense up when they see the police? How can we get over that fear of each other? And it can only come by our having a conversation with each other.
And covering all of the very, very practical points that go along with getting along.
Absolutely. Just simple old things. And it goes back to when Rodney King said, can't we just all get along? And the situation is, no, we can't just all get along. Because if I don't know you and you don't know me, then I'm going to put up all my defenses of why I don't even want to get to know you because of the number of things that has happened. We have to find a way, however, to come together for the good of all of us who are talking to each other.
And I'm glad you brought up Rodney King. Speaking of that monumental decision, it came just a few days short of 29 years before this trial's verdict. In your heart, how does this comparison resonate?
One of the things, we all saw what was happening to Rodney King. I mean, you know, we all saw the number of licks and hits that he got with nightsticks, flashlights, and all of that. We saw them beat him, beat him, beat him. But then to see the ones who perpetrated that beating on him to walk away without any repercussions whatsoever, it made you automatically think, well, you see a police officer, he's not for you or she's not in your corner. Mr. Floyd's brother brought up a very important point during his interview. He said that George was not the first one. He brought up Emmett Till. He said that it all started back then. So finally, with this verdict that we have, is dedicated back to Emmett Till, you know, and that's been a while. They beat him so bad and threw him in the river. And when they pulled him out, he was so disfigured. His mother, of course, could identify him. But at his funeral, his mom said, no, we're not going to have a closed casket. We're going to have an open casket because I want you to see what the racist people did to my son. All of that flared back up in his mind, and it made me think about, yeah, I remember that case, remember what happened, and I can kind of see where that dedication of this first step of justice is definitely a good way to give homage to what Emmett Till went through.
To everyone that came before and gave so much, up to and including their lives, this will not make it right, but we're hoping we can all go forward.
This is the first step, yes, ma'am.
What change do you hope to see after and because of this verdict?
In the short term, what I hope to see is that true justice is done And to me, true justice would be definitely that he would be put in prison for his crime, for sure. In the long term, I'd like to see policing policies changed in the country. I'd like to see money put into police training in the cities, diversity training. Let me get to know you. You get to know me. And it may not be in our day, Julia, but definitely we are hoping at some point that from this verdict, you know, we can kind of like see in the tunnel. We may not see the end of the tunnel, but we may be able to see in the tunnel. And while we are in the tunnel, we get to know each other. We get to protect each other. We get to know what we should do when one of us is in trouble. What we are hoping and praying for is not a hard thing to do. It's just that we got to do it. And somebody just got to push for it to be done. My hope is that we push for better policing and better police communication and more people who look like the community as a part of the policing force.
So how much of this literally translates to people using the voice that this gives them?
When you gain a victory, you brag about your victory, but then you get to work to try to have another victory. So this victory does not just make you sit down and say, okay, we got that. We got to work at getting more. We got to work at making sure that it's just not a one-time deal, that this is a long-term situation. So we go from one to the other, to the other, to the other. We are hoping that it doesn't take death in order for us to move. But the thing is that I don't care what you say, what organizations you may have, everybody in your organization is not bad. And everybody in your organization is not necessarily good. We have to try to find the good in the situation so that we can all move forward. Because if we're going to just dwell on the bad, then we're going to stay stuck. We're not going to be able to go anywhere, not be able to move from anywhere. And the other thing is that we look to our leaders. We look to our people who are in charge to make some laws that will stick in every situation. We have to come to a common ground. Racism is racism and it is everywhere. How are we going to fight that situation?
Great points. And yes, now's the time to find a way. Speaking of which, you're an educator and caseworker for Fort Wayne Community Schools, which is an incredibly diverse school district.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to adults who are trying to have conversations about race with their children?
Well, first thing is to tell your children who they are. This is who you are, and you live in America. So these are things that, because of who you are, that you may be expected to encounter, and maybe you won't. We have a very diverse school population here at Studi Elementary. And the good thing about being at Studi Elementary is that we allow kids to be who they are. And if they have some misdirections about who they might be, then we try to spend time with them to help them see this is who you are. We are proud of who you are and you can move forward. You know, you don't have to be what people say you are if that's not what you want to be. You know, when you woke up this morning, you woke up in you, not in somebody else's body. You woke up in you and you are who you have. So where do we go from here? Let us help you understand that we need all people in this world. We all got to grow up and be adults. And then when you grow up and be an adult, if you don't remember anything else, remember Miss McKinley said, I am somebody and I can be somebody and I'm in my own body and I can conquer the world. And those are the kind of conversations you have to have, even though they go into a whole different situation when they leave from where I am. They know that I have told them I love all of you and I see all of you. So I discipline all of you the same way. I love all of you the same way. I see the situation that a boy did something, a girl did something. Not a black boy, not a white boy. A child did this. So we have to let them know we all make mistakes and we can move forward from there.
Thank you for the advice. It speaks volumes on the subject. And now you've seen quite a few major milestones, turning points, since your own life's work for racial justice began in Alabama in the 1960s. How does the whole Floyd incident and verdict measure up?
There were times when I was growing up that I wished the verdicts had been like the verdict that was the other day. The bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church, the four little girls, all of the people whose names we don't have, who marched to change, who marched for justice, who was trying to get justice to happen and gave their lives people who even lived in Fort Wayne, like George Smith, who is no longer with us, and Louise Smith. George participated in the lunch counter sit-ins and all of that to try to make a difference. We marched, we ran from dogs, we ran from fire hose and all of that. But the situation is we were trying to make a difference. And I am 75 years old and I'm saying some of the same things we were fighting back then, we're still fighting now. It's just that the dogs are not chasing us. The fire hose are not there. The police chief is a whole different somebody. What we were fighting for then, there's still a fight for now that needs to happen by any means that will help pull the community together. We made some milestones, yes, but I still see, Julia, that there are many more milestones that we need to accomplish.
So, Dee, where is all of this taking your cause?
I thought I can go somewhere and sit down and rest on my laurels, but I guess I can't. The fight is still needed. We ought to all know our roles. I'm not going to run from tear gas and all of that. You know, I was very young when I was running from dogs. There's no way I can be running from no tear gas right now. But for those young people, the Bible says that young men are for war and old men are for counsel. So, you know, I'm in that category to give counsel to those young people. I can bring you some water. I can bring you some pizza. I can bring you some whatever you need on the sideline. Please don't have me trying to run nowhere because, you know, I'm not going to be able to do that. But God knows I can give you some counseling on how to avoid getting hurt, how to have a conversation with someone, let them know how you feel very respectfully, not being disrespectful, you know, but getting your point across. So that's what we have to say to our young people. Hey, you go toe to toe, you go eye to eye, and you tell them how you feel and what it is that you're looking for out of this movement that you're in. The worst thing to do is say, I wish I had when I could have. We got wisdom to share with our young people so we can give them that. I used to sit at the feet of my grandmother and listen to a lot of things. And a lot of things she told me, I still carry that with me today. That's what we need to do with our young people. We need to sit down and give them a story. Give them how these things can work and how you can make sure that you make a difference. I used to say, my feet are itching to march. But my feet are itching for our young people to walk to City Hall and say, no longer are we going to take this. You need to change your rules, and I'm here to help you do that.
Fort Wayne resident Dee McKinley is a community leader, social activist, and educator. Dee, thank you so much for your spirit as well as sharing your thoughts with us today. Blessings on your journey.
Thank you so much, Julia, as always.